We're on the air. Hello, Jay. Okay. Hello, Benji. Hello, Yosef. Hello, Mommy, Daddy. Hello, Abba. Here we go. So, a shayla sent in by Zach Rosen sent in the following few shaylas, actually. What would be if you leave your telephone or your cell phone, actually, on top of a stroller, on top of something which you need on Shabbos? And come Shabbos, and now you want to use it. Well, you're allowed to use it. It has a phone on there. So it's interesting. There's a concept called busis, which means if you left it there on purpose, so then when Shabbos came, you wanted it there, and now you changed your mind or whatever, the whole thing becomes muksa. The whole stroller becomes muksa. And therefore, you would not be able to touch, move the stroller at all. If, however, which is most likely, it was forgotten there, so then the whole stroller does not become muksa. And therefore, you would be allowed to just shake it off, and then the stroller is not muksa. So that was the most likely scenario. It happens a lot. You leave something somewhere, as long as it was accidental, just shake it off, and the other thing underneath it is not muksa.
Okay, that's Rabbi, one question. If I intentionally leave muksa on a bookshelf, so maybe the bookshelf becomes a busis, do the books also become muksa, or can I use the books?
Great question. No. Let's say you put the phone on the bookshelf, so that perhaps the shelf will become muksa, but the books are not muksa. It would only affect what's holding the phone, holding the thing. Now, there are other details, but that's a loose look at it. Another question was, you're not allowed to make kinyanim on Shabbos. You can't buy things, give things. You can't even accept a present on Shabbos if it's not for the need of Shabbos. So yes, what happens if you go to someone's house? You want to give them a present. So you want to give them a bottle of wine. That's fine. You can make a kinyan on that because that is for the need of Shabbos. The question is, does the owner, does the host have to use that thing, right? So you give him a bottle of wine. So he made a kinyan on it because it's for the needs of Shabbos. Does he actually not have to open up the bottle of wine? Let's say you have 8 guests over and all 8 guests bring you a bottle of wine. So now you have 8 bottles of wine. Does the owner have to open up all 8 bottles of wine? The answer is no. He can make a kinyan on it because it could be used for the needs of Shabbos. Whether he actually uses it or not is irrelevant. So therefore, you bring it to him, he accepts it, that's fine. He does not have to use it, but it's enough that he could use it for Shabbos. And another shaila was, you have a hot water.
Could you finesse the whole thing?
You could.
Before Shabbos, you're makne it to him. You don't have to tell him. And you just deliver it on Shabbos.
You're absolutely right. In order to do that, right? That's not the shaila. I mean, the shaila was you didn't do that. You're right. You could avoid the whole shaila, but that's a little tricky because if you don't see him before Shabbos, he can't acquire it. LMI, what you could do is give it to someone else to acquire for him. But you can't go from right hand to left hand and say, I'm picking up and acquiring it for him. It would require a second party. So, yeah, you could.
Doesn't always requires an intermediary?
You can't. If you own something, you can't go now and put it to your other hand and say, I'm picking up for him. Because you need a second party to do it. You would need someone else. What you could do is in the store, when you buy it, you say, I'm not buying it for me, I'm buying it for him. That's fine, because then you're the middle party. It's the owner of the store, and you're the middle party. Once you own something, you can't give it to someone else without him or the third party. Okay, and another shaila was, if you forgot to flip the Shabbos mode switch on your urn, on your hot water urn, are you allowed to use it on Shabbos? So you boil the water for Shabbos, it's all good, just you don't flip the switch. So that we say is not ma'akev, and you can still use the hot water thing. Try to flip the switch, but even if you don't, you can still use it on Shabbos. Okay, moving on. Our agenda this week is going to try to do Mishnah Berurah Chelek Daled. Now, Chelek Daled is probably one of the most unlearned section of Mishnah Berurah, and the reason is it discusses Eruvin and Tchumim, and a lot of other things which, A, are complicated, B, regular person doesn't need to know them so much because the rabbis take care of it, which is true, except there are certain things that it's important, A, to understand what's going on, and B, certain things will come up, and therefore you should know what to do in that situation. I do see that we have some people who live in Manhattan. Now, Manhattan is very tricky, so let's get into it right now. As far as the general detail, the general concept, the malacha of Shabbos is haitzah. Haitzah is an isidor raisa. the Isidorites of carrying find itself two places. Either you pick something up in Rishus HaRabim, take it to Rishus HaYachid, and put it down. That's called an Akira. Picked it up in Rishus HaRabim, the public domain, carried it, put it down in Rishus HaYachid, in a public, in a private domain, or vice versa. You picked it up in Rishus HaYachid, put it down in Rishus HaRabim. That is an Isidoraisa of carrying on Shabbos. The other example is where you picked it up and you walked four amos in Rishus HaRabim. You picked it up in Rishus HaRabim and walked four amos in Rishus HaRabim. Those are the two scenarios of Isser D'Oraisa of carrying. One Rishus to another Rishus, or four amos within Rishus HaRabim. That's it. Those are the D'Oraisas, both of them requiring a picking up and a putting down, and a Kira and an Acha. Now, that's the D'Oraisa. The Rabbanan, trying to protect us from transgressing the D'Oraisas, extended that to other scenarios. And we're going to discuss that soon. What is Rishus HaRabim? Rishus HaRabim is a place that is either 16 amos wide, or, and we're lenient with this opinion, that could have 600,000 people. Now, it's a big shy that how do you measure the 600,000 people? Is it in one day? Is it that type of day who lives there? So it looks like the Mishnah Berurah takes the more machmir approach, which is 600,000 people in the city. So then the streets in that city become a Rishus HaRabim. And therefore, Manhattan, according to many opinions, I'm going to take now what we're going to call the mainstream yeshivish approach, which is Manhattan, as far as Brooklyn and Flatbush, are all considered Rishus HaRabim. So most cities will not be, but the large cities like Manhattan, Flatbush, Brooklyn, according to this approach, according to what seems to be the Mishnah Berurah's approach, would be that they are Rishus HaRabim. Large cities, Chicago perhaps as well, Los Angeles as well, Tokyo as well, the large cities would have the status of Rishus HaRabim. Now, if you have four walls enclosed, then you are Rishus HaYachid. Then you are a private domain. Okay? So that's Midaraisa. Anything with four walls enclosed is a Rishus HaYachid. Anything that has 600,000 people is a Rishus HaRabim. And therefore, if you go from one Rishus to another, just picking it up, putting it down, that would be the Isidoraisa. Therefore, going from your house to your front lawn should not be a problem at all, because your house is Rishus HaYachid. What is your lawn? Your lawn doesn't have four walls, but it doesn't have 600,000 people. It's not a street connecting that. Or going from your house to your neighbor's house. This is where the Isidore Rabbanan comes in. The Rabbanan created this new concept called a Karmelis. A Karmelis is somewhere in between, not Rishus HaYachid, not Rishus HaRabim. For our purposes, it's a front lawn that doesn't have a wall, that doesn't have a fence. Or in a small city or in the suburbs, all the streets in the suburb, like in Arizona, all the streets in the suburbs would be considered Rishus HaYachid or Karmelis. And therefore, Midaraisa, you could carry them, and Midarabanan, you can't. Okay, that's enough of the background. Those are our terms over here. So Rishus HaYachid, Rishus HaRabim, Karmelis. The Rabbanan extended the Isser of carrying, not just Rishus HaYachid to Rishus HaRabim and vice versa, but even to one Rishus HaYachid to another Rishus HaYachid or to a Karmelis. Now, because the Rabbanan were the ones that created this Isser, the Rabbanan were the ones that created a Heta to that as well. And that's what we call Eruv. What is an Eruv? An Eruv is some which the Rabbanan cooked up. But the Rabbanan only had the right to cook this up and do this because they were the ones that created the problem in the first place. So now, if you have a Rishus HaRabim, you cannot make an Eruv. Everyone agrees. That's one thing there's no machlokes about. If you have a Rishus HaRabim D'Oraisa, let's just say Manhattan, you cannot make an Eruv around. It's not going to work. A Rishus HaRabim cannot have an Eruv. However, if what you have is a Karmelis, or Rishus HaYachid, so then Midaraisa you could carry there. The Rabbanan were worried, so they said you can't. The Rabbanan said make an Eruv. What does an Eruv do for you? By you taking this string and putting it all around the city, what you've done now, or all around your lawn, or all around your campus, or all around your neighborhood, what you have done is created one domain. What you've done is really called it Tzuras HaPesach. By putting the string all around, you created one domain, and therefore you can carry within that area because it's now like a private domain. Okay? Those are the mechanics of an Eruv. Now, we're not going to go ahead and build one tonight, but loosely the way it goes is you have these sticks, and you have a string that has to sit on top of the stick, not meeting the side of it, sits on top of it, got to be tight. It goes around the whole area. There cannot be an opening there of more than 10 amas. But it's got to be, you have to know the halachas and know how to do it. And then you have created yourself an eruv. Okay? That's loosely what's happening. Now, how is it relevant for us, right? So first you can decide, I don't hold to the eruv, which many people do, and it's fine. But realize why and what you're doing. Everyone doesn't hold to the eruv around the Shazarabim. You have to know, why are you not holding an eruv? The idea is because maybe it's not going to be constructed properly. But it could be, and it's very tricky. But in Rosh Hashanah, no one holds the eruv. In Rosh Hashanah, and Carmelises, that's where you could hold of it. And you're deciding not to because it may not be constructed properly. That's fine. Now, moving on. Let's say you do not have an eruv. Let's say you do not hold of the eruv. Let's say you're in a shesaravim that cannot have an eruv. Now, how does that affect you? That means you cannot go from your house to your front lawn if there's no fence. If it's fenced in, that's your all your domain. That's fine. But if it's not fenced in, you cannot carry from one to another. Not only that, what about an apartment building, a condominium? Okay, so there the whole building is enclosed. Still, since there's no eruv around the city or around your building, you cannot even go from your house to the hallway carrying something because you're carrying your key, your siddur, your talis from your rishus to a communal rishus that also is included in the isser of carrying midr avana. So if you have an eruv around your building, no problem. You can go from your apartment to the hallway down the block because you have an eruv. But if you don't hold of the eruv, or there is no eruv, because there's just a rabbim, there can't be an eruv. So not only that, you can't even carry within your building. In your house, you could, but from your house to the walkway, you cannot. That introduces us to this new concept called eruv chatzeros. It's a different type of eruv, completely. It works completely differently. This eruv chatzeros is joining members of your chatzer to becoming one big family. And the way you do that is not with a string, because there's no string, you're inside of the building anyway. The way you do that is having a meal by one neighbor where the whole town, the whole building chipped into that, or you give it as a present to everyone, you make a bracha on making this Eruv Chatzeros, that makes the whole building one family, and therefore you can go ahead and now carry within the building. Now, a hotel or a hospital doesn't need this, because we view it as if it's one owner, because there is one owner and he has access everywhere. So there it's one owner. You don't need to do an Eruv Chatzeros. Within the building, you can carry anywhere. But if it is multiple owners, like apartment buildings, and people can't just come in and out of your apartment or a condominium, so then you cannot carry without making this Eruv Chatzeros. And no problem to do it. It's very easy to do, very cheap. Take a loaf of bread, a box of matzahs. You can keep it from week to week. Say this, you make a bracha, and you're saying this is joining the whole building together. Great. Where it gets a little bit tricky is if you have a guy or Mechal or Shabbos in your building, because they break up the whole thing. Because you cannot make the whole building one family with people who don't believe in it or hold of it. So then it gets a little trickier. You have to do something that's called schirus, which is you have to rent the hallways from the superintendent. So you go up to him, hello, Joe, I would like to rent your building. No. Your hallway? No. What are you going to do there? I'm going to make a party there? No. It's a religious thing. Don't worry. It's not going to cause any noise. There won't be any parties in the hallway. But loosely, what you're doing is you're renting the hallway from the building, from the owner, from the superintendent. And therefore, that's another form of making it one domain. Okay? But it's a little tricky. I'm just here not telling you how to do it, but that's the issue at hand. Now, you've created this Eruv Chatzeros. So now the building is one. Okay, so we've discussed Rosh Hashanah, Mishnah Yachid, the Issadur Rabbanan, Eruv. Then when there's no Eruv, in order to carry from your house to your lawn, you can't because there's no fence up. In order to carry from your apartment to your hallway, for that you need an Eruv Chatzeros. Now, this is relevant that even if you have an Eruv, sometimes the Eruv gets knocked down, like in stormy weather. So if it gets knocked down, you have to be prepared. Your whole life, you were able to go ahead and carry from your apartment to the hallway, and now there's no air because it was knocked down. So then you have an issue, right? So my father's pointing out, could be if an apartment, maybe there's an owner who owns something in your apartment, that could be. Condominiums, you don't have that. Apartments, you could have it, but it's something to be discussed with the halakhic authorities. Fine. Now, let's move on to practical shilas in an area where you don't have an Eruv. Now, again, what that means is either you don't hold to the Eruv, or there cannot be an Eruv because it's just Rabin, or the Eruv fell down. So now, very practical shilas is the key. Okay, how do you get into your house if there's no Eruv? How do you carry the key? So first of all, I would like to wear the key under my yarmulke. That doesn't work. In order to wear something without an Eruv, it has to be normal wear. Wearing a key on your head is not normal wear. So there's a contraption where you make the key part of your belt or part of your tie, whatever it is, your tie piece. You have to concoct something because the only thing you're allowed to wear if there's no Eruv are normal things in the normal fashion. If I drape a talus over my shoulder, that's no good. That's not the normal way to wear a talus. If I put a tissue box on my head and balance it to shul, oh, I'm wearing a tissue box, that's not going to work because that's not the normal way to wear a tissue box. It had to be normal wearing in the normal fashion. Even so, rain hats, the plastic covers for rain hats, is a big machlokes if that works because that's not, you're not wearing that. Your hat's wearing something. Who says your hat can wear something? So that's a big debate if a plastic rain covering is also good. So if there's no Eruv, or you don't hold to the Eruv, you cannot perhaps wear that. What about the plastic? What about the buttons? You have a shirt that has excess buttons. So they are no use of you for you in Shabbos. It's not part of your shirt. So that we're lenient with, we say it becomes part of the shirt. Fine. But if you have excess doodads that you're just carrying, that's a problem. So the key could be an issue, is an issue. So there, you have to make it part. But now, let's say you can carry the key. How do you open the door with the key? Because if you put the key in the door and you open the door, you just carry the key from one rishus to another rishus. Tricky. So get a combination lock. But let's say you don't have a combination lock. So what you have to do is you turn the key, then take the key back out, put it back on your belt or however you carried it in the first place, and then you open the door. And that way the key didn't go from one rishus to another rishus without you wearing it in the proper fashion. Now, a very common example today is masks. Are you allowed to wear the mask? Everyone's wearing these masks to protect from COVID. Are you allowed to wear the masks? So if it's an abnormal wear, then you can't. But we can say today it's normal. Today, for whatever reason, this world's changed. It's normal now to wear the mask on your face. Okay. However, if you pull it down under your nose, that's not the way it's supposed to be worn to protect it, right? You're allowed to wear the mask because it's protecting you and others. But once it's under your nose, under your mouth, on your chin, that's not the way it's protecting people. So that is halakhically an abnormal wear. And therefore, you would not be allowed to walk in an area that has no Eruv with a mask under your nose, under your chin. And that is how I heard, I spoke to three different Paiskim. They all three agree with this. That if it's under your nose or under your mouth, you cannot wear the mask in a place that has no Eruv. I wanted to say maybe that becomes a normal way to wear it, but then that's not true. That no one wears, that's not a normal garment. So because you're weird now, the whole world's weird, you wear it on your chin, that doesn't make it a normal wear. And therefore, if there's no Eruv, you have to wear the mask on your face. And if you take it underneath it, that could be a problem. Now let's say you say, forget it, I don't want to wear a mask anymore, I'm taking it off. That's also a problem because if you took it out from your house, if you're not taking it off in the middle of the street, that would be a cure for Mishnah Yachid and a Hanukkah Mishnah Rabbim, that would not be allowed. So you have to wear the mask. If it snaps, let it fall by itself. You cannot go ahead and put it down, because if you put it down, that's you putting a hanacha in Rishus HaRabim. That would be a problem. Now, very common is you're walking out of your house and you forgot, oh, there's something in my pocket. What do you do now? You're walking, there's no air, but you don't hold to the air, and you feel something in your pocket. The worst thing to do is stop. Because if you stop, that itself is putting it down. That's halakhically putting it down. So here, important to know, if there's no Eruv, you don't hold an Eruv, and there's something in your pocket, do not stop. Keep walking. Now, in the event you already stopped, okay, and you started going again, so that initial stopping was a problem, but now you started going again, it's another problem. So don't stop. Just because you stopped once, don't stop a second time. Now, let's say you did stop already. What you want to do is let it fall by itself. Because you don't want to start walking again because that would be another continuation of the problem. So you want to position whatever the object is to let it fall by itself. Now, if you haven't stopped the whole time and you're walking, keep walking. Don't stop till you get to where you have to go. And if you're going to have to stop because there's a red light, either keep walking in circles. Yeah, be that weird guy like the exercisers. Like, they never stop. So you can be like one of those exercisers and just keep walking and like jogging and play, like never stop. or while you're walking, position in a way that it will fall out by itself. Okay, that is a short view of Haitzah and Eruv Chatzeros. One last thing that Mishnah Berurah Chelek Da'at discusses is about Tchum. So this is a new issue. Tchum is nothing to do with carrying. This is an issue of you walking too far out of your city. You're not allowed to go 2,000 amas, which is around 3,000 feet, loosely outside of your city. Now, the major question is, where does your city end? Like today, a lot of cities are connected. That we have to leave for another time, exactly where the city ends. But once the city has luckily ended, you have 2,000 amas from there. So you could theoretically walk 20,000 amas. Like if your house is in the middle of the city, you could walk the whole city. And then from the outskirts of the city, you have a 2,000 amas. Now let's say for whatever reason, the hospital where you want to visit, friend you want to go to, lives past that. You can't walk there and visit him on Shabbos, unless you do another thing called an Eruv Tchumen. So this is another type of Eruv. This is also with food. What that is, you measure where you want to go, and the 2,000 amah mark outside the city, you make your home there. You put food before Shabbos. You put food. You create what's called an Eruv over there by putting food, putting a meal. You make Eruv Tchumen. That becomes your home for Shabbos. And therefore, you have 2,000 amahs additional from that place, but only from that side of the city, not the other side of the city. So you can go back to your real apartment, walk to your new apartment, which is 2,000 amahs away, and then continue another 2,000 amahs from there. That's what Tchum is, and that's what Eruv Tchumen is. And we don't really do that so much. It's not so practical today, but it could be if you're in the mountains, in the Catskills. So that's very relevant. You want to go from one bungalow to another bungalow. So each one may be considered a different area, and therefore you would have to make an Eruv Tchumen or not go from one area to another area. Okay, and the last thing that's discussed in Mishnah Berurah Chelek Daled is Rosh Chodesh. So Rosh Chodesh coming up this week. So a quick run through certain halachas in Rosh Chodesh is we say Chatzi Halel, not the whole Halel. We make a bracha. You know, there are some people who do not make the whole bracha, do not make a bracha if you say Chatzi Halel. That's a Rambam Shita, but we do make Chatzi Halel. I don't know what the Sephardim brothers do. If there are any Sephardi brothers over here, the Rambam holds you do not make a bracha on Chatzi Halel. Ashkenazim do. Now, as far as Yalav Yavo, so we do not say, we do not have to have a Suda on Rosh Chodesh. And therefore, even though you do say Yalav Yavo in benching, if you forget Yalav Yavo, since you are not obligated to have a Suda in the first place, if you forget Yalav Yavo, you do not need to repeat the benching. In Mariv, you should say Yalav Yavo, but if you don't, you do not need to repeat on that, right? In Shachris and Mincha, if you do not say Yalav Yavo, you need to repeat. If you catch yourself before the three steps, before the last Yilu Ratzon, so then go back to Ritzay. If you catch yourself in Sim Shalom, go back to Ritzay. If you caught yourself before Modim, so then you say it right there. And then say Yalav Yavo right there, and then continue with Modim. If you say Yalav Yavo in Musaf, then you have made a terrible mistake, because there is no Yalav Yavo in Musaf. Okay, so Shacharis and Mincha is where you say it and repeat it if you don't. And the last thing is Kiddush Levana. Kiddush Levana is a mitzvah. Everyone should do it. It's brought down that any month that you say Kiddush Levana and you will not die that month. There was a certain story with someone who's about to die, and they said, well, he can't die because he said Kiddush Levana this month. It turned out the Rosh Chodesh started like an hour later, and he died an hour later. I mean, he died in the new month. So it's not like if Hashem wants, you're going to go. But it is brought down, like that month that you said it, you won't die. I mean, you won't die. So either shall make it that you're not going to say it that month, or you'll die the next month, whatever it is. But definitely there's something spooky going on in Kiddush Levana. We definitely should say Kiddush Levana. And you do not need to say it with the Minyan or Matzah Shabbos. It is encouraged and great if you say it Matzah Shabbos with the Minyan. However, if you're going to run the risk of not saying it, it may be rainy, cloudy, don't run that risk. Say you should say it outside, under the open sky, from around the third day until the 15th day. But you check the calendar exactly when it starts, when it ends. But definitely say it even if you do not have a minute. Okay, that is a wrap on Mishnah Berurah Chelek Daled. I mentioned next week we'll start Yeri Day of certain Yanu of Kashas. A lot of people requested Kashas, so do that. Now, a thought in Rabbeinu Bechaya, in Chavit HaLavavis. So the Chavit HaLavavis in Shar Bitachon, as we're still in the psicha, he discusses that one advantage of having bitachon is that nothing can really hurt you if Hashem didn't want it. And we say Gam Zulu Taiva. If you really believe it, that means any fallback, anything, any disappointment that you have, whether it's in life or in Parnassa, it was God will. If you really believe in Hashem, it's not going to get you down because Hashem decided this is what's good for me. And I have no idea why, but that's an advantage to someone who has bitachon. And he adds on to that, no person can hurt you. There's no one person, your competitor in business, can't take away your business. Because if you're supposed to make $1,000, you're going to make it. If you're not, not. It has nothing to do with him. So you don't need to do cutthroat methods in your business and be a jerk and inappropriately and steal and be that guy that no one wants to be around because you're going to have the exact same amount of money anyway. So if you really internalize that and believe that, have the right to talk on that, well, then it'll change your life. It'll change the way you do business. There was a story, which I forgot the name. It was a famous businessman when we call him Reuven for tonight. So Reuven was a dealer in fabrics and linens, I think. And he had to deal with Walmart. So every year he would go to the headquarters of Walmart, wherever that was, we'll just call it Oklahoma. I don't know exactly. He would go to Oklahoma. He would meet, he had a meeting. He would meet the guy. They would have the deal. Great. He went this year to Oklahoma and he sees some guy pacing back and forth, nervous, like shaking. So Reuven asked him, what are you doing here? He said, I wanted to meet Walmart and I don't have an appointment and they're not going to let me in. So turns out this was his competitor. This was his competitor, which he knew of. This is a competitor for the linen industry. So Reuven said, I'll get you an appointment. The competitor looked at him, what? He knocked on Mr. Walmart's door and said, listen, I'm here for my appointment. Hi, Joe, Reuven, how you doing? Yeah. But Reuven said, listen, do you mind meeting this guy first? He said, no, I don't want to do business with him. He has no appointment. And anyway, he's a competitor. Why would you want me? Don't worry, meet, there's room for everyone. Anyway, he arranged the appointment. The guy was like floored and he gave him some business. But what he was trying to show was like, I don't really care. I'm going to make the same amount of money anyway. So let me help this guy out also. That was something which if you really believe in Hashem, you could do that. If you don't, I mean, that's a big move. Anyway, that's one message that Chavizah is pointing out. In Tefillah, a thought of Kavan in Tefillah, in Birchas HaTorah, we say Asher Bachar Banu. There is a big Bach in Torah, Shulchan Aruch. The Bach has a very long explanation of Birchas HaTorah. And he says, when you say the words Asher Bachar Banu, what you should have in mind is Har Sinai. When Hashem chose us, that means on Har Sinai, Hashem decided to give us his possession, his beloved possession, the Torah. So Asher Bachar Banu, we're saying, thank you, Hashem, for choosing us. And he explains that through the Torah, the Shekhinah comes down to this world. And that it infuses Kedusha into our bones. So if you do not appreciate or learn Lishma, he says, so then you will be lacking this Shekhinah entering your life, entering your body. So when you're saying Lilma Torah Lishma and Asher Bachar Banu, what you should be having in mind is thank you Hashem for this ability to have the Torah come, to have the Shekhinah come, to merge my bones with my neshama, which brings a kedusha into my body. And that he explains that is what you're supposed to be having in mind during Berachas HaTorah. Okay? And something like Parsha, this is the famous parsha of the shidduch between Yitzchak and Rivka. And we have over here, Eliezer went to get the girl for Yitzchak. So we all understand, right, it was unbelievable that Rivka, like the water comes up to her and she's showering chesed and giving us chesedim. So we understand very well why Eliezer would want to take Rivka to be the daughter-in-law, to be the wife for Yitzchak. But why would Rivka go? Nowhere are we told that Rivka asked any questions. Well, what kind of guy is Yitzchak? And what kind of house does Avraham Avinu have? Why would she go? So, right, we understand why the guy wanted the girl. But why would the girl want to go with this guy? Right, I know a lot of guys are said no to by many girls. What's going on? Right? Many girls say no to many guys, and yet Rivka didn't say no. Oh, you know, it's sad, people here know that. But yet Rivka didn't say no. There's a competition here. Rivka didn't say no to Eliezer. Why? So it's brought down like this. Rivka understood that the only thing Eliezer was looking for was chesed. Nothing else. Not yichus, because she did not have yichus. Not money. She wasn't coming with any money. The only thing that was important to Eliezer was chesed. So she said, whoa, if that's the only thing that's important to you, well, then that's exactly where I want to go. So by what she saw was important to them, the value system of the other team, is what convinced Rivka to join that team. And that's something in our dealings, whether it's tzedukah or not, what the other person values, if you don't value that, and that's not a value to you, that may not be the place that you want to be. But if there's certain things that you value, and you see that other person values as well, well, then that's the place that you want to be. And that was what Rivka understood by Eliezer, and that is a wrap. Have a very good Shabbos. And Mitzvah next week, we'll be doing Yerideya, Kashas, and Yanum. All right, good Shabbos.